Are you exhausted from carrying the weight of your relationship, doing it all, holding it all together, and getting nothing in return? You might be stuck in the overfunctioning pattern. Today, Dr. Ashley Southard shares how women can stop overfunctioning in love, restore themselves, and finally create the relationships they deserve. Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life. This week, we had Dr. Ashley Southard on the show, and we had a powerful conversation about the overfunctioning pattern in love. Dr. Ashley shared how this dynamic develops, why it leaves women feeling anxious, resentful, and burnt out, and what it really takes to break free and restore yourself. Welcome to this week's episode of Women Winning Divorce. I'm Heather Quick, owner and attorney at Florida Women's Law Group. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Ashley Southard, a psychotherapist who specializes in helping women break free from the overfunctioning woman in love pattern. After living through it herself and burning out from carrying the emotional load in her marriage, Dr. Ashley now helps hundreds of women shift from self-sacrifice to self-restoration. Today, Ashley and I will be discussing what it really means to be an overfunctioning woman in love, how this pattern keeps women stuck, exhausted, and resentful, and practical steps to stop overfunctioning and start restoring yourself. Welcome, Ashley.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it is great to have you. I can't wait to just jump right into all of this. So for our listeners, would you just share a little bit about yourself and really how you got to be doing this amazing practice that you're doing now?
Absolutely. So professionally, I am a licensed clinical therapist in the state of Arizona. I have a private practice. I work with individuals and couples all day, every day. And I've been working with clients for over 20 years now. And through that work, I've learned a lot about relationships. I've learned a lot about trauma and how that plays out in the relationships. And so I bring a lot of that clinical expertise into my work, but I also have a very personal story that informs what we're going to be talking about today. I was married for nearly 20 years, met my partner when I was 18, got married when I was 24. We bought the house, we adopted the cats, we had the kid, we did the whole thing, and I still found myself really unfulfilled and really burnt out in this relationship dynamic. So I slowly started to figure out what was going on. And then I started writing about it. And at the time, I had a small little Instagram account. I would post little mental health things here and there. And I just started writing about this dynamic that I had found myself in. And I thought, well, maybe another woman can relate to this. So I started posting on my Instagram account, and slowly but surely, women were coming out of the woodwork saying, oh my gosh, this is me. You're describing my exact experience. And so over the years, I've continued to write about it, continued to kind of shed light on this dynamic that's really sneaky and it's really insidious. It's hard to spot it when you're in it. Okay. And so my goal is to put words to what's going on and help women make sense out of the nonsense.
All righty. So what exactly does it mean to be an overfunctioning woman in love?
Yeah. So before I even define it, most women are like, oh my gosh, that word, I can relate to that word. So the overfunctioning woman in love, she is carrying the bulk of the relationship on her shoulders. So she's often feeling like she's in a relationship that has a very one-sided dynamic where she is doing most of the work to keep the relationship going. Now, there are a lot of ways we can overfunction. It can be physical, it can be financial, mental, emotional. But what I really focus on is that emotional aspect of overfunctioning where you feel like the burden is on you to stay on top of the relationship, to notice the connection and the disconnection, to notice the issues that need to be resolved, to initiate the conversations, to try to make sure that your partner is doing okay because you don't really trust them to make sure that they're doing okay. And so you're feeling the weight of the responsibility of this relationship and not only your emotional well-being, but also your partner's emotional well-being. And over time, it takes a toll on you. It also takes a toll on the relationship.
Got it. So how did you realize you were caught in this over-functioning pattern?
It took me a really long time. I started out in the relationship thinking, I'm just going to give and be really compassionate and really thoughtful. And the more that I give, the better the relationship will be. And so I did that for a long time. And I noticed that when my partner wasn't regulating their emotions, when they were getting really upset, that I would go in and work extra hard to get them to be okay again. Mm. And I started noticing that when there were issues in the relationship, I had to be the one to bring them up or they were never going to get brought up. And then when I did bring them up, I had to work really, really hard to try to get some sense of resolution. And even then, it didn't usually last. And so I spent many, many years in this pattern of thinking, if I just try harder, then things will get better. And if I keep giving more, eventually my partner will realize what a sacrifice I'm making. And they will say, oh, wow, thank you so much. And then they'll reciprocate. And that day never came. And so then I started to get really angry and I started to get really frustrated. And eventually I burnt out. And there came a point where I realized I literally have no more ideas of how I can keep this relationship going and keep them engaged and keep myself feeling the loving feelings I want to have for my partner while carrying the load of this relationship entirely on my own. And so there came a point where I was out of ideas. I didn't know what else to do. So I just started doing less because I was so tired and so burnt out. And then I realized, wow, if I don't do it, it's not going to get done. If I don't bring it up, it's not going to get addressed. If I don't deal with it, nothing's going to happen. And that's when I realized there's a really gross imbalance here in who's carrying the weight in this relationship. So that's when things kind of dawned on me that, maybe something is not right here. And then I started to play with that. I started to do a little bit less and see what happened. Wow. I started to not bring things up right away and give them some space to maybe bring it up. And I observed and I noticed, exactly what I thought. If I don't do it, it won't get done. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the beginning for me.
Okay. And so then I got to ask, so when you don't bring it up or you don't do it, then what then happened to that relationship? Did it survive anyway?
It did not.
Okay.
It did not survive. So there were many, many, many years of me trying more, trying harder. Maybe if I do this, maybe if I bring it up this way, maybe if I say it that way, maybe if I do it at this time and not that time, maybe if I try all these things, then our relationship will get better. That didn't work. So then I started stepping back. I started taking better care of myself, focusing on myself. Because when we're in overfunctioning, we're over-focusing on them. We're paying attention to what they're feeling, what they're needing, what's going to keep them happy and comfortable, what's going to prevent them from getting upset. And so I started refocusing on myself. What do I need? What am I feeling? How can I take care of myself? And just kind of giving them the space to do with that what they wanted. If they wanted to step up and do more in the relationship, great. And then that was a couple of years of just kind of taking care of myself, getting my nervous system to relax, seeing what they did with it. And eventually it just became very, very clear that if I didn't do it, it wasn't going to happen. And I was no longer willing to carry the relationship on my own. So it did eventually end.
And I mean, I just have so many questions because did your partner notice it as well, or was he happy in just the way it was going? And then, but it was you who was like, this isn't working for me because I want these things addressed.
Yeah. So the overfunctioning woman is usually in a relationship with what I call the underfunctioning partner. So while you are emotionally overfunctioning, they are emotionally underfunctioning, which often looks like they're pretty checked out from paying attention to the emotional nature of the relationship. So they can be pretty oblivious. They can actually be pretty selfish, very immature, irresponsible. And so they're pretty comfy cozy when we're doing all of the labor for them. And so when I would try to address things with them, I would get met with a lot of defensiveness. You know, I would be told that I was overreacting. I was having too big of a reaction, that I was asking for too much, that I'm just never happy, that I'm trying to make them be the perfect partner. And I would just get a ton of pushback, because the reality is they're very comfortable keeping things the way that they are. And so there was just a lot of minimizing and defending, and then turning things around onto me, that if I would just do a better job communicating, or if I would have brought it up at a better time, or if I would be more understanding of what they're going through, then we wouldn't have these problems. And for a long time, I believed them. So I'd go back to my drawing board and like, okay, I'll look in the mirror. Okay, I'll try to do this differently. I'll be a better communicator. And it took me many years to realize it didn't matter. It didn't matter what I said. It didn't matter how I brought it up. I still got the same defensiveness, the same brick wall. There was just a different excuse the next time. And what I realized eventually, and this took me a long time, is this person didn't want to take responsibility for their part in the relationship. They wanted me to carry it for them. And when I was no longer willing to do that, that's when it all fell apart.
Yeah, this is such an interesting conversation, because I've never heard of this dynamic or in this way, but it makes sense. Now, how did your journey of self-restoration begin? Like, what really shifted for you?
Yeah, so self-restoration is the term that I use to describe kind of the healing process of coming out of overfunctioning and really getting into a more balanced dynamic within yourself. And hopefully that can ripple out into the relationship. But most importantly, it's about getting balanced within yourself. So I had to get to a point where I literally had nothing left to give to my relationship. I was tapped out. I had tried everything. I had hit my proverbial bottom emotionally in that relationship. So I really had nowhere else to go but inward. And that's what started my self-restoration journey, was saying, okay, I'm going to start taking care of me. I'm going to start paying attention to what I'm feeling and what I'm needing. And I'm going to do this without apology, right? I'm going to start honoring my boundaries. I'm going to start saying no. And you know what? If they don't like it, they're going to have to figure that out, because I've tried to figure it out for them for the last 15 years and it's not getting me anywhere. So I'm going to do something different and take care of me. And part of my rock bottom was I had developed a really serious autoimmune disorder. I was getting sicker and sicker and sicker as the years went on. And it was, you know, for so long, it was just kind of this inconclusive, like, well, you have some autoimmune, but we don't really know what it is. And then one day our relationship was in the toilet and I went to my doctor. I was really sick and she ran my labs again. And she said, okay, your numbers are finally bad enough that we can give you an actual diagnosis of lupus. And you now need to start taking all these medications and you're going to have to do a lot of things to manage this. And there was something in me that just knew that that wasn't the solution. Now, it might be for other people, but for me, I knew what the problem was. So I knew what the solution was. And that was kind of a turning point of like, okay, my body is now really hurting from all of the stress that I'm living in. And so I started just focusing on me. And that was the game-changing moment. And really then giving my partner the space to decide if they wanted to actually show up in this relationship in the way that a healthy adult relationship needs or not. And I really had to reconcile within myself that whichever way the cookie crumbles, I'm going to be okay. And I was, and I am.
Which is wonderful. That you are and that you took that stand. And it's, you know, I think for a lot of women listening, it's great to hear that, because sometimes it does take that much, right? Like, I think there are probably a lot of little signs along the way, but then you kind of had to maybe get hit a little harder in the head with that diagnosis to then say, wait a minute, I need to make changes in my life that will be better for me.
Well, sure. And I was really invested in making this work. You know, I think like a lot of women, like I was, this was my relationship in my adulthood. And I had a whole life built with this person. I had a home. I had a child. All my finances were merged. Like everything about my adulthood was interwoven with this person. So I was deeply invested in making this work. And I was willing to turn over every stone 100 times to try to make this work. So yeah, it had to get really bad for me to say, okay, I am willing to walk away from all of this because it's that bad within myself, right?
And I mean, it does. We all have to get to that point, right? Everyone has to decide, okay, now basically the pain outweighs the pleasure. I have to make a difficult decision that I've been avoiding because we all do whatever that is. And sometimes I think, you know, that's where we keep getting signs until we take action.
Now, yeah. And for so long, I kept thinking maybe if I say it this way, maybe if I do it that way, that things would change. And I had to go through that enough times, which took years before I really believed, like, no, it's not going to get better if I say it this way versus that way. But I didn't know that until I knew that. And so I really encourage women who are relating to this to honor your own timeline and honor your process, because it's so easy from the outside looking in to say, oh, you just need to leave. You know, this relationship is toxic. You just need to leave. It's just not that easy. And I want women, if they do decide to end the relationship, I want them to make that decision from a place of clarity and self-respect and saying, I know that I have done everything I know how to do to make this work. And I can put my head on my pillow at night knowing I cleaned up my side of the street. What my partner chose to do with that, I have no control over, but I did my part. And I can feel good about that, even though the outcome is not at all what I wanted it to be.
I agree with you. I think that's so important. For, you know, one, knowing, hey, I did what I could do in this relationship, but also for future relationships, for, you know, moving forward, if we don't learn about ourselves and about what we are in, it's likely we will repeat the same patterns, you know, subconsciously till all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what have I done?
Yeah, but, exactly.
You know, that understanding and really looking at, hey, how am I showing up in this relationship? And how is that good or bad? You know, but just kind of owning your part and what you can do, I think is great advice, because if it's gonna end, you then want to hopefully learn from that. And make
that's right. And you really want to be able to understand what your contribution to the dynamic was, right? Because underfunctioning is really dysfunctional, but so is overfunctioning. It's just overfunctioning is a lot kinder. It's a lot more PC. It's a lot more relationship oriented. So we feel like it's good, but it's not. It's really unhealthy when it comes to a relationship. And so for us overfunctioning women, part of our self-restoration journey is recognizing that if we give and give and give to a relationship, and we don't also balance that out with requiring our partner to give back and requiring reciprocity, we're going to attract another partner who might look different, but they are going to have those underfunctioning qualities, because if we have to give in order to get our self-worth, we're going to attract someone who needs to take.
Yeah.
So we have to get really good at saying, hey, I am a very giving, loving partner, and I require that in return. And I'm not going to self-abandon and self-sacrifice to keep my partner happy. They need to take good care of themselves and know how to keep themselves happy and know how to give to me in this relationship as well. And when we require that without guilt, without feeling bad, without thinking we're selfish or mean, that's when we're able to attract a relationship dynamic that is balanced, where both of us are giving to each other, both of us are graciously receiving from each other, and it's a healthy, mature dynamic.
Now, why do you think women fall into this dynamic, and why does it feel, you know, of course, so hard to step out of it?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things. I think women in general, we're very relationship oriented. I think most of us, especially overfunctioning women, we love to give. We love to make people feel good, and we're good at it. You know, empathy is our superpower. You're going through something. Oh my gosh, I'll be there for you. I know how that feels. I want to help you feel better. And so we lead with our heart, which is a beautiful trait. Overfunctioning is too much of a good thing. So it's good to be empathic and compassionate and loving and kind, but we have to know when to limit that when there's not reciprocity. So I think part of it is we just go in and think, I'm just going to shower my partner in love, and then they'll give that back in return. And when they don't, we take that as an invitation to work harder rather than an invitation to
meaning,
set limits.
Right, as an invitation, well, if I do more, maybe I'm just not doing enough. And if I do, Yeah. Then I will get that reciprocity.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're too quick to look in the mirror. So if our partner says, well, if you would just be a better communicator, then we won't have this problem. And you're like, okay, I'll go work on my communication. And we have a really hard time holding our partner accountable and saying, no, it's not that I'm not being a good communicator. It's you're not taking responsibility. But underfunctioning partners, they're really, really good at deflecting accountability and playing the victim. And we fall for it, hook, line, and sinker. And they prey on our empathy and they prey on us feeling bad for them. And that's where we get stuck. So it is very hard to step out of that because you can feel mean, you can feel guilty, you can feel selfish. But part of self-restoration is recognizing that it's not mean to expect an adult to be emotionally responsible for themselves. It's not selfish to take care of yourself and honor your own limits, right? But it's undoing a lot of programming and conditioning we got growing up. And I also have to say that I think we have a huge generation of women who are struggling with this right now, women in their 40s and 50s and late 30s who were raised by moms coming out of the women's movement. And we were all raised as young girls with the message of you can be and do anything, right? We had all the Barbie dolls with all the careers. And that's awesome. I was told I could be anything I wanted to be. I was told I could work. I was told I could be a mom. I could do it all. And the problem is so many of us took that seriously. And we were like, if I can do it all, then I should do it all. So we have this generation of women who are not only out there crushing it in their careers, but they're still doing all of the labor at home because at the same time as we were telling all of the girls that they could do anything they want, we were not telling the boys how to become more engaged in their relationships on the personal side of life. They were still crushing it at work, but they're not coming home and crushing it in their relationships. So there's an imbalance in what women have been messaged and what men have been messaged. And we're seeing it a lot now with women in their 40s and 50s who are saying, wait a minute. I've been doing it all like I was told I could, and I'm exhausted and I'm resentful and I'm burnt out and I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you also say you're not crazy. You're in crazy.
Yes.
So let's talk about that a little bit.
It's one of my favorite lines, and it's really, really important because if you are with an underfunctioning partner, one of their goals in this relationship dynamic is to avoid accountability, to not have to take responsibility for themselves because they really would like you to take responsibility for them. And so what they do is they masterfully turn everything around onto you. And they convince you that you're the problem, that your needs are too much, your emotions are too high, you're constantly moving the needle or the goalpost, you're just never happy, and that they're fine and you're the one creating all of the problems in the relationship. And it makes you feel crazy. When you get told that enough times, you start to really believe it. And it's crazy making. And the conversations with them, they're not showing up to get resolution. They're not showing up to actually hear you. They're showing up to create confusion, to defend themselves, to deflect accountability. And next thing you know, 3 hours have passed and you feel like you are losing your mind. And so I always like to remind women, you're not crazy. You're in crazy. This dynamic is crazy making, and you've got to be able to see the dynamic and see what your partner is doing to avoid accountability so that you can start to reclaim your power and stop thinking that something's wrong with you and that you're crazy because you're not.
Yeah, I think that is so important, right? You're just like to be able to look at the situation, and it's not all you because it never is.
Right.
It takes people, and it can't be just you.
Right.
What are the first steps you'd recommend taking for a woman who realizes she's overfunctioning in love?
Yeah. So I would say the first thing is to really start to get acquainted with how you overfunction and how your partner underfunctions. So if you go onto my website, you can download a free quiz that asks a lot of questions about overfunctioning. So it'll help you start to realize like, oh, that's overfunctioning. So it could be doing things for your partner that they really should be doing for themselves, right? So a lot of times when we're overfunctioning, we're more in a mother role with our partner than we are in a partner role. So you're doing things for them that they really should be doing for themselves. But more so emotionally, if you're walking on eggshells, if you're holding back, if you're not bringing something up because you're afraid of their reaction, if you're playing small so that they can feel big, you're overfunctioning. So really starting to recognize where are you kind of showing up in this overfunctioning way? Where are you bridging the gap between what you're doing in the relationship and what they're not doing in the relationship? And where are you keeping things comfortable for them while you're feeling uncomfortable inside? That's a huge flag of overfunctioning. And then I also encourage women to really start to pay attention to their partner's underfunctioning. So again, it could be tangible. Where are they being irresponsible and just not doing the things that they need to be doing for the relationship? But more importantly, where are they showing up in really immature, oblivious, selfish ways? How are they making sure that their needs are met, but they're not paying attention to you and your needs? Mm-hmm. How are they acting like a child and having temper tantrums when they don't get what they want and then expecting you to regulate them? So noticing those patterns and really, really paying attention to how does your underfunctioning partner become the victim every single time and make you out to be the villain? Mm-hmm. And so you've got to become super aware of these patterns because you can't change it until you start to notice what's going on. And then once you notice this, then you've got to slowly start to step back. And that's going to be really hard at first because you're so conditioned to focus on them. Mm-hmm. And it's going to raise your anxiety. But you have to do this where you've got to step back, refocus on yourself. What do you need right now to take care of you? And let your partner do what they're going to do, right? Mm-hmm. Let them have an emotional tantrum. Let them get upset. Let them blame you. Let them make irresponsible choices. And then see what happens and see if they can step up. So when you step back, you're giving them space to make the choice to step up. They may or they may not. And if they don't, then you're at a fork in the road and you have to decide if their choice to not step up works for you.
That's a good point, right? Yeah. Because if you don't step back, you'll never know.
You'll never know. Yeah.
Now you teach women about becoming a self-restored woman.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? How do you help women with that?
Yeah. So becoming a self-restored woman means that you are putting yourself at the top of your own priority list. And most of the time when I first start working with women on this, they're like, oh my gosh, that's going to make me selfish. And then that's going to make me like my partner. And I don't want to be selfish. But it's not going to make you selfish because here's the thing, you're never not going to be empathic and compassionate and considerate of others. It's in your bones. You're always going to be thinking of others. But we've got to get you back at the top of your own list where you are thinking of yourself and putting yourself into your own equation so that you then have something left over to give to your partner, your kids, your friends, whatever, without being so depleted and honestly without becoming resentful. Right. So becoming self-restored is taking care of yourself. It's also honoring your own boundaries and knowing where are your limits and how much of yourself and your energy and your time that you want to give to your partner before you are going to require reciprocity. And really expecting that from your partner and not being the one to always give, give, give. So the self-restored woman has to get good at receiving. Mm. And I always use this example of if it's your birthday, and everyone around is singing you happy birthday and you're just, you know, dying of embarrassment. The overfunctioning woman is very uncomfortable being the center of attention sometimes or being the focus of others' attention and effort. But we've got to get good at that. Otherwise, we're going to stay in the constant giver role, which sets us up for this dynamic. So being able to receive, being in a relationship dynamic where your partner can tend to you and you don't feel bad about that, where they can be inconvenienced by you and you are okay with that, and really getting good at receiving and taking good care of yourself.
Yeah, which can, I'm sure that it takes change, really consciously doing it. Yeah. And I'm sure for some women, you just got to do a little at a time.
Yes.
Because if we can't learn how to do that, we're always going to be in those relationships that are so one-sided, right?
That's right. Yeah, because we feel so uncomfortable with them giving to us. And so we reject it. And they will get used to that. And they'll be like, okay, then I'm going to stop trying to give to you. And I'm just going to let you give to me. And now you're back in that overfunctioning, underfunctioning trap.
Now, how does life change when a woman stops working for breadcrumbs and starts honoring her worth?
Well, in my experience with myself and with other women, it tends to get worse and then it gets better.
Okay.
So you do have to change the relationship dynamic by doing less. And most of the time, the underfunctioning partner is not going to step up. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
Every once in a while it happens, but most of the time they don't. And so For a lot of women, the relationship will dissolve. Now, that could mean divorce. It could mean that they have more of a roommate situation, or you know, they have other arrangements, maybe because of the kids or finances or whatever. But emotionally, that connection really dissolves. And then she can really focus more on herself, do more of her own work. And from there, life gets a lot better. Things get more peaceful.
Okay. But
you find more joy. You're no longer walking on eggshells. You're no longer trying to manage an adult who's acting like a child. You're no longer expending energy on someone who just is so committed to being the victim and making sure that you're always wrong. Right? So suddenly you have more energy for yourself, for creativity. Your body is more at ease. You're not in this hypervigilant fight or flight mode anymore. But the number one word I hear from women is peace. I'm finally at peace. My body's at peace. My mind is at peace. My home feels peaceful. Life just feels peaceful and joyful. And that, I think, is the greatest thing we get out of self-restoration.
Absolutely. So what are two or three small but powerful shifts a listener could try this week to begin moving out of the overfunctioning pattern? They're like listening. They're going, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Ashley's right. That's me. I sound so familiar. What can you tell them maybe?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, one small shift you can do is really start to notice when you have the urge to step in and do something for your partner that they really should be doing for themselves. And this could be something as simple as making themselves lunch. Or it could be something bigger, like they need to bring something up in the relationship. You can tell they're upset about something. And rather than you bringing it up for them, you're going to wait for them to bring it up.
Okay.
So that's one small shift is just don't do something actually, right? Do less.
Yeah. Right.
Another shift that you can make is when your partner gets dysregulated, when they get upset, when they start pouting, when they start sighing loudly or slamming the cabinet doors and they're making it very clear they're upset, but they won't use their words and tell you, and they're waiting for you to come in and overfunction and do it for them, don't do it. You know, it's uncomfortable, but that might be when you need to leave for a while. Go hop in the car and go for a little drive or take yourself on a walk. Get away from their energy and let them take care of their emotions. They will or they won't. But it's not your job to manage their emotions. That's their job. Mm-hmm. So go take care of yourself. And in the early stages of this, it's really uncomfortable to have your partner be upset and you not make it better. So just leave for a while, you know, get away from that energy. Take good care of yourself. You're starting to teach your nervous system that you can handle it and that you can be okay even when they're not okay.
You know, okay, you're describing that situation, and it reminds me of situations with my children when they were teenagers, and you knew it, and they're wanting me like to jump in, like, let me get in there in that mud and, you know, mix in with it. And it's like, you know, if you guys have to say, you're going to say it. Otherwise, I'm not going to solve this or jump in so that you can then lash out, right?
That's right.
With their children. And I had to be the adult and not get into that. But that's just what that made me think of. So we all have been in those situations. We absolutely have. I think if we really think about it, you're like, oh yeah. And you know, because you know, right? This person you're with, your husband, your partner, whatever, you sense them, especially if you're intuitive and a feeler and you know, you're like, oh yeah, but maybe I'm just going to let them bring it up, right? So
that's right.
Like, oh, are you okay? What's going on? What can I do to fix it, right?
Yep. Yeah. So and the challenge here is you know they're not going to bring it up.
Right.
And that's the bind that the overfunctioning woman finds herself in, because she'll usually say to me, well, Dr. Ashley, that's great. Okay, I'll go for a walk and I'll come back and he's still going to be pouting.
Still
so
in it.
Then what do I do? And I say, well, you know, wait it out. Like, really put their feet to the fire, and they have to figure themselves out.
Yeah.
And they either will or they won't. But you've got to step back and see what they choose to do, because you deserve to know what you're really dealing with here. When you're overfunctioning, you're constantly running interference.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not actually seeing who they choose to be in this relationship because you're so busy puppeteering the whole thing. So when you stop doing that and you really see how long they're willing to just not address something, like, that's valuable data. It's painful. It's gut-wrenching to realize. But this is actually what you're up against. Mm-hmm. This is the level of avoidance, emotional immaturity, and selfishness you're actually dealing with. And then you've got to do the tough work of deciding within yourself, is that the type of partnership you want to have? Is that what's bringing you fulfillment, joy, and peace? And if the answer is no, all right, then your work is to figure out what do you want to do about that? And the answer is not to go and try to get them to change. We have to meet our partner where they're at. This is how they are choosing to show up in their relationship. Yeah. Does that work for you? And that's really hard to admit.
Exactly. It is. Yeah. But yeah. It's worth it, right? To do that self-exploration, to really dig in. And even if that conversation is just with yourself, right? It's a good one to have because I think too often we'd rather look the other way and then just be in it versus really question what is going on here. And is this what's right for me, you know?
Right.
And is this where I want to remain?
Yeah. Exactly.
Now, what's the, okay, I got another one for you. What's the great rest and why is it so important for women's healing?
Yeah. So the great rest is the term that I use when you are coming out of overfunctioning and you have finally decided you're putting yourself first and you're no longer going to run circles around your partner trying to get them to be okay. And this could be while you're in the relationship. Mm-hmm. This could happen afterwards. For me personally, it was after my divorce when I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have to manage this person anymore. And the great rest is when your nervous system is finally coming down and it's finally able to take a second. And you're going to feel tremendous fatigue. And it's not just going to be physical. It's going to be emotional. And it's after years and years of running on fumes and your brain just working a mile a minute, everything slows down. And it's like this rest that you haven't had in years, if not decades. And your body is craving it. So for me, the great rest was a year of slowing down, taking as much off of my calendar as I could. And when you're overfunctioning, you're productive, you're busy, you're doing everything. The to-do list is never ending. And the great rest is like, I'm not doing any of it. And you can feel lazy at first, but then you recognize like you just have to do this. Your system is craving it. I craved stillness. I craved quiet. It was that peacefulness that I was looking for. Even my home, the way I decorated it after the divorce was all neutral colors. It was like my nervous system just needed no stimulation. And it, you know, it was just this beautiful time of kind of cocooning or nesting or hibernating. We see in nature that animals do this too. And it was a time to just get a really imperative nervous system reset where I could start to feel safe in my own body and in my own space. And there wasn't any noise anymore. I could finally hear what was really going on for me. It was a very peaceful, soulful time. And then eventually my energy started to come back and the creativity kicked in and the desire to get out there and do new things and get engaged and, or, you know, get involved, get engaged in my community. All of that started happening, but I had to take time to truly restore myself after years and years of running myself into the ground. Mm. So I like to predict this for women so that when it happens, you don't feel like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? I suddenly just want to sleep. I don't want to socialize. I just want to lay on the couch and relax. Like, yeah, because you haven't done that in years and you're exhausted.
Makes so much sense.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, what's one truth you wish every woman understood about love and self-worth?
I wish every woman understood that love, healthy love, is emotionally safe. Oh. And when you're caught in overfunctioning and underfunctioning, love does not feel safe because you don't feel like you can go to your partner and really share what's going on. You don't feel like you can go to your partner and really have your needs not only be heard, but really responded to. Mm. You don't feel like you can share your vulnerabilities and have those be handled with care. So in this dynamic, love does not feel safe and love should feel safe. It should feel emotionally safe. And if it doesn't, then there's a problem.
I agree with you. That's wonderful. Now, before we go, Ashley, our show is called Women Winning Divorce because I believe we should all be winning at life. So I would love to know, what does winning at life mean to you?
What a great question. To me, winning at life means that I am living my authentic truth. When I was stuck in overfunctioning, I was denying my intuition. I was not listening to my gut. I was not prioritizing my feelings and my needs. And I was trying to be the partner, the person, the mom, all the things that I thought would make everyone else happy. And I was dying inside because I wasn't in my authentic truth. Mm-hmm. And now I live in my truth and it feels really good. Does that mean that sometimes it creates stress in a relationship or in certain things I'm doing? Yes, but I'm not abandoning or betraying myself anymore. And that feels really, really good. And my body feels great. My mind is at ease. My heart is happy. My nervous system is peaceful. So I'm living in alignment. And I think that is winning at life.
I agree with you. That's amazing and so beautiful. Now, lastly, where can our listeners find you for more information and resources?
Sure. So you can go to my website, drashleysouther.com. And you can find me on Instagram. I'm very active on there. We have over 90,000 women who are resonating with this material. I post regularly. So check me out at Dr. Ashley Southard. And you can find a ton of great information there.
Wonderful. Well, we have reached the end of our show today. Thank you so much, Dr. Ashley Southard, for joining us to share your powerful story and expertise with us. Your insights on breaking the overfunctioning pattern and embracing self-restoration will help so many women listening today reclaim their peace, health, and self-worth. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Listeners, if you or someone you know in the Northeast Florida area is going through or even thinking about divorce, you're not alone. Taking that first step can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. Our newsletter is filled with actionable advice tailored to guide you through this process. By signing up, you'll gain the tools to face the unknown with courage and see if we're the right fit to support you during this life-changing time. Don't wait. Click the link in the show notes, fill out the form, and take the first step toward building a brighter future today.
This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not an advertisement for legal services. The information provided on this podcast is not intended to be legal advice. If you have a legal issue, please contact an attorney in your local jurisdiction. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are solely those of the individuals and do not represent the views or opinions of the firms or organizations with which they are affiliated. This podcast is available for private, non-commercial use only. Any editing, reproduction, or redistribution of this podcast for commercial use or monetary gain without the expressed written consent of the podcast's creator is prohibited.